Hello, this is Brian Scuttle here.
Ronnie Haynes.
Dema.
And we're Yahoos with a microphone here to talk about the Animatrix. We're going to go right through all of these.
Well, you guys are going to be
starting with the Final Flight of the Osiris.
The only computer generated.
Computer generated one. Written by the Wachowski brothers, directed by Andy Jones, and with the animation done by Square Pictures.
This is some great animation.
It's going to be brilliant.
Yeah.
As it is.
Square responsible for the Final Fantasy movies.
And Final Fantasy video games. So
yeah.
About the company.
Well, yeah. Peace Right Now, Conga Fury by Juno Reactor.
Yeah,
I love.
Very much like Final Fantasy. Very realistic. Animation here.
Actually, even more so than Final Fantasy.
Yeah,
they've really done
Final
a good.
The Final Fantasy games, the games are known to have the best full motion video sequences in the period.
Yeah.
But I mean they've upgraded graphics and animation since even the movie.
Yeah, I mean this is even more faux realistic than they had in the movie, which was, well, debatable as far as how well it succeeded as far as what it was.
What Lawrence Kasdan movie was this a short subject?
Dreamcatcher.
That's right.
Quite underrated movie, I felt. But
this was
I can understand why people didn't like
this
it.
This was a short subject with Dreamcatcher.
Yeah, it was. If it debuted with Dreamcatcher, and
in theaters.
Yeah, was the only one to really be shown in theaters. I mean, I think there were some theaters that played all nine Animatrix or screenings and such like that, but
this was a
girl's got some skills here.
Most motion capture animation or do you know that? Was this motion capture?
I would imagine some of it would be. I mean, I don't know.
Since it's a screen, I think they could do anything, but
yeah. I mean, I know there's a behind-the-scenes thing on each and every one of these segments, but I can't remember what the... It's been a while since I've seen them.
Well, that could be one of those girls. I guess that would be one of those guys. You know,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, as far as... This was sort of intended to be, I believe, producer Joel Silver always considered it Matrix 1.5, sort of a prequel to Reload, but sort of tying the first and second movie together.
Well, this comes pretty close to being one of the few new Matrix short subjects, whatever, you know, as far as like all the stuff that's come out recently, you know, to hype everyone up for the new Matrix movies. This is one of the few things that really came close to, I thought, to capturing the spirit of the first movie.
This segment in general, in particular, or
no,
the whole idea of the Animatrix.
This short, the Final Flight of the Osiris. I mean, I really did feel as if this was one of the few new Matrix products that captured the spirit of the original Matrix.
I don't know. I was always kind of weary about it. I mean, partly because of the fact that I never really felt like it, you know, told the story that on its own.
I guess
it wasn't meant to stand alone, though, really.
Yeah.
I mean, but.
Well, that's what I really found myself appreciating about it, is that it did seem as if it was, you know, yes, it's only a short subject, but it's very much so. I think it does hold its own really well, I think. But, I mean, that just goes to show, I mean, how much I know about short subject material.
This is where the
humans find out exactly what the machine's plan is. This is more or less. This is a prelude to one of the closest preludes to Reloaded, anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where we really find it. Because I mean, that's all they're talking about throughout Reloaded is the machines planning on, or what the machines are planning on doing,
yeah.
which is drilling the Zion. And this is how they find out, which is, I think that's pretty neat how this is the story of how the humans find out. Mm-hmm.
A couple of quick notes. First of all, one of the voices here, I don't know which one, is by John DiMaggio, who did Bender and many others on Futurama. And the music, of course, by Don Davis, mm-hmm. or the orchestral music by Don Davis, who composed the music for these shorts.
I like this. I think this is, like Dave said, Dave was able to put in words better than I could, but I think this is this feels pretty complete. Feels like it's a real story. And that was the something else that kind of occurred to me is that this this is it's a mini love story, mind you, but it's I think it's a little bit it's even more interesting, I think, more compelling than what we see happen between Neo and Trinity in Reloaded and Revolutions. You know,
well, Reload certainly I could argue that I would agree with that at least.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, I really. The love story wasn't as apparent.
Well, we can talk about that when we do Reload and Revolutions. Mm-hmm. right now, I mean,
okay.
You know, we're trying to figure out, you know, I know I'm trying to figure out stuff I can say. I mean, I can praise the animation left and right. There's some fantastic animation mm-hmm. here. But it's like, you know, there's not much to say. I mean, you know,
I mean,
thematically, I mean... You know.
That would have been really interesting to experience this in the theaters.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
But I need a girl that can do that. A little bit of that, too. Yeah, but I mean, you could tell somebody was, you know, inviting the story and then and then probably laying out the storyboards. You could tell that somebody was having a lot of fun, you know, just kind of taking a couple of things over the top here and there.
Yeah.
Being as authentic as they could here and there. So, yeah, somebody was having a lot of fun while doing it.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of a mini-action film, really. I mean, that's all it is action. There's not much
Not much to wrap your brain around on this one.
No.
Which is probably one of the reasons it's one of my favorites.
That's gonna hurt.
Yeah.
But
this is the only one that actually has an MPAA rating.
Oh, really?
PG-13.
Oh, wow.
All the other ones are not rated.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Well, this is the only one that was...
Well, but you know, I mean, it's, a lot of the other ones are even more disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know.
But yeah, this was the only one with a really wide release.
That's yeah.
That is true.
Well, I don't know. I mean, well, in theatrically,
right.
which we already discussed, I mean, there were... four that were released online,
mm-hmm.
which is where I first saw those four.
How ironic, she was in her own little world.
Beautiful textures.
Mm-hmm. But not just because this is a very similar action sequence to the one that you do see in the original Matrix, but just very much, I really do feel as if this was one of the few that came close to capturing, again, the spirit of the first movie. One of the reasons.
Is that a Samsung phone?
Product placement
in an animated film. Go figure. Anyway. Hate to really leave on that note, but you know, can't think of anything else. Yeah. Okay, now we get into the heavier stuff with the Second Renaissance, Part One. And
yeah, I'm gonna go get something to drink.
this one can be incredibly deep.
Yeah, and it's. Partly for that reason, it's among my favorites of the anthology.
Mm-hmm.
This and Part Two.
Right.
And, you know, this is a pretty cool way of doing the origin story of the Matrix.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Certainly more interesting than they did in the original film, mm-hmm. at least in my opinion.
I would have to agree with that.
The original put online too.
The original film is a movie of its time, but this is very much this is that much more compelling, I think.
Yeah.
I just wonder why I have.
Talk to the mic.
I was just wondering how people who haven't seen it, the type of understanding that they have versus the people who have seen this, and understanding that we have. It's just. Just seeing this, you know that other people don't have the complete story. Mm-hmm. What about dogs?
Yeah.
It's all coming.
I like the gradual build up to what happens.
Yeah.
It's very organic.
And you and that word.
What? Organic. It's a good way to describe things. It's a good way to describe, something that's gradual and subtle and very believable.
I like the sort of biblical references. It was good. They're kind of picking it up as if it were days, stuff like that.
Well, I mean, they're going. Well, I mean,
sort of a Genesis.
The Matrix has always had
of course,
religious subtext.
Yeah, I mean, just
to
like,
it. I mean,
one of the last scenes of Revolutions.
Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty much laying it out right there for you. But I like how they translated that into this.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I like how they really touch on some pretty dramatic and truly disturbing things that have happened in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
which we'll see the references to him later.
Right.
And, this is a really good social commentary. It's a really good example of what really good science fiction can be.
Mm-hmm.
Why
weren't
ideas and stuff like that?
Why weren't Reloaded and Revolutions as good as well?
One word, money.
Yeah.
Enough said. Well, no, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, but I like what you said about the social aspect of science mm-hmm. fiction, and that is somewhat ignored.
Yeah.
And
from what I understand, this is also kind of paying homage to Isaac Asimov and his robot series of novels and short stories.
Okay, the ripping head open thing is kind of gross.
Yeah.
That was pretty rough.
That's an image that's going to keep me up tonight.
However, not the most disturbing scene for me. Not yet.
No, it's getting there, though.
Yeah. You got people demonstrating with robots.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of
million machine rods.
Sort of like the
Tiananmen Square, China, and you got some references to that in here. The Holocaust, of course, which especially is coming up later, but in a couple of scenes. Civil rights movement.
This is the most disturbing scene for me.
Yeah.
Right here, the little girl.
Yeah, because of the fact that first you feel like. Yeah. It could be a real girl, and then you realize.
But it's still, this is horrible,
Yeah.
Well, as ridiculous as the concept of, feeling for a machine is, it's totally. the concept is totally grasped here.
Yeah, and it's. Something that I've seen, that I've read about the Animatrix and how the Wachowski brothers, and, I've never really given them a whole lot of credit as writer-directors in live-action films,
right.
Such as they are, But I will say this is probably with the second Renaissance and the short we're going to see after part two, this is probably among their strongest and most original writing that they've done. And it's a credit to them that they don't make easy villains out of the machines.
Right. And they tried to bring that across in Revolutions.
You know? Yeah.
And but it wasn't as strong, I didn't think.
No, definitely.
Right, you know, here we have.
And it wasn't as apparent.
In the last half of this one, we have very obvious reference to the conflicts in the Middle East, most especially the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. These two are written by the Wachowski brothers quite well.
Yeah.
And basically the idea is the origin story of the Matrix, which...
Mm-hmm. Which, I don't know. For me, it kind of just goes to show that... maybe the whole Matrix thing should have been like an anime or something like that.
Yeah.
Rather than actual live action movies. I mean, you know, as a director, writer, of course you want it to be live action, you know.
Yeah.
But that may not be the best way to tell the story, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the Japanese with their electronics taking over.
Yeah.
I'm always reminded of with this. You know, but I mean, all these are real issues. You know, the if you've got one country who, you know, you're importing all their goods, you know, exactly how much power do they have, and type of stuff like that. You know, I mean, it's just great the way they sort of intertwine real issues, you know, with the entire story. I mean, they're coming from so many angles: real social issues, you know, real science fiction stuff, biblical references, and it's just kind of making it all work. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, which is part of the reason why I really like these, why the Second Renaissance shorts are two of my favorites.
Right.
My favorite's coming up, but yeah.
Just like him. Yeah, I don't quite understood all these sort of images that they're showing, you know. At the beginning, this one, you know, at the show. I mean, who's this woman supposed to be?
I think it's supposed to be Mother the Earth. Zion Archives.
Oh, Zion Archives. Yeah, right. But I mean, I'm just.
But like,
you know, I mean, where did the image of the woman come from? I have no idea. Okay, I'm there.
I don't know. Again, one of those sort of, you know, one could argue one of those quasi-religious symbols. Here we go with Second Renaissance Part 2, which I'm sure this is the one that is Dave's most disturbing part in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, each one has a part that's equally as disturbing.
Yeah.
But this one has an extremely disturbing part of it, too.
Yeah. Especially disturbing when you consider what's really going on in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are very timely, very relevant. I like the dissolve in that.
Yep.
The fact that you can still see her and she's...
I was listening to Returns of the top five movies or whatever of 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And Reloaded was number one.
Who's?
Reloaded.
But I mean, who... What?
I was with this. Reloaded was like the number one movie of the year, supposedly. And well, that's just what I heard from this one particular list.
Well, if you're talking box office, yes, worldwide it was the number one.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, you know, the response to these movies, as mediocre as they were, compared to the first one, the response was, you know, pretty freaking phenomenal. And you know, it does make you wonder just how many people did in fact take the time to view these shorts. And
diehard fans are the ones who are going to care about the shorts. I don't think your average moviegoer is necessarily going to care too much.
Yeah, that's one of the few things that makes me think about these. Really makes me makes these more compelling. Makes you feel a little bit more like, you know, you do care a little bit more about what exactly makes these films tick.
Right. Dave, you were gonna say something?
I was thinking about, you know, even though, you know, just talking about who would watch these things, and you know, my older brother, he's not quite, you know, kind of the sci-fi guy that we are, but I was surprised when he had actually bought The Animatrix, you know, just because he had read so much about it. So yeah, I'm not quite sure. Even with like minimal marketing of this, because I really didn't even see this marketed anywhere, you know, and like minimal marketing of this, how many people would pick it up, you know, just to get more of the action.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anime is getting pretty big though.
Yeah. It really is.
I mean,
you have the weird, crappy children's stuff like Dragon Ball Z, or like the marketing Yu-Gi-Oh type things, but it is actually getting pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, I go to Media Play often. And
yeah, there's a whole anime section there now. Yeah.
And their anime section has grown.
Yeah,
it's grown exponentially. It's remarkable how much stuff is coming out. I mean, it's, you know, I've seen Cowboy Bebop shirts, Cowboy Bebop, you know.
I mean, Cowboy Bebop's one of the really anime ever.
Posters and, you know, I've seen stuffed animals of Ein, the dog from Cowboy Bebop.
What? And
yeah.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding me.
No, I'm not.
That's insane.
And it's like, I mean, it's, you know, it's big. I mean, it's cool to go see stuff like, I mean, I've seen a few animes in theaters. I've seen Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away, the two Miyazaki films.
Right.
And let's see, what other ones? I saw the Metropolis, the animated Metropolis, and
it's a little reminiscent of Starship Troopers here, a little bit anyway.
Oh.
Why?
Sorry. And God, what was the other one I've seen? Well, Cowboy Bebop the movie, and yeah, I mean it's exciting when some of these actually get released in theaters around here. It's like I'm be willing to bet we're going to see a lot more anime in theaters, especially around where we are, because art house theaters are getting more prolific. Yeah, this I didn't need to see.
Yeah, that was pretty sure. Yeah, I mean, you would normally hope that the humans through some type of resourceful something or other would win.
Yeah.
But this is like 10 minutes of humans losing.
Yeah, they can't. Well, the thing is though, it's like they can't win.
Right. Exactly.
Because we already know the aftermath.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, and it goes back to the whole idea of, you know, not necessarily painting the machines as bad is just plain villains, you know. I mean, they're...
Well, I almost find myself siding with the machines.
Right.
To a certain degree, yeah. I mean, you know,
Except the
argument is...
Dead by those things right there.
Yeah. I mean, the argument would be, of course, that, I mean, we brought this upon ourselves.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly
which
why.
Is really what happened.
Yeah, that's a pretty disturbing scene.
Yeah.
But this is the origin of that moment in the original film where you see all the...
Yeah, the power plant.
Mm-hmm. It's really broken down to a science here.
Mm-hmm.
That's not symbolic or anything.
No, of course not.
No.
No emphasis.
No.
It's just completely original stuff.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, I really didn't need to see that.
I can't help but be reminded of, you know, the lore and the mythology of Terminator as well.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they, you know, obviously, I mean, Terminator came first, and this was very much inspired
you don't
by
know,
it, I think.
You don't know.
Signing with Barco, but that's what it was.
Yeah. I doubt, though, James Cameron came up with this much of a backstory, though.
Oh, no, I'm sure he probably didn't. I mean, but, you know. Yeah, and they've got commentary for the Second Renaissance. They've got commentary for a few of the episodes, and I remember the director really thinking, you know, how they were going to get away with that shot of, you know, United Nations just basically being annihilated in 9/11. And, you know, this is some of the most haunting stuff for me in this entire thing, you know.
Some good science fiction, though.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you know, you don't see this too often. It's pretty heavy, and that's probably one of the reasons why. But,
right.
I mean, sometimes you have to go for the slightly disturbing to.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I was able to appreciate the original movie. You know, because it went in those places that, you know, obviously a lot of science fiction films haven't been going.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see too many science fiction films showing Rose and Paul Rose of people being used as batteries, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, that in and of itself is disturbing.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I've really started to appreciate about the Matrix.
Despite your qualms that you do, in fact, have about it.
Yes, and what I'd like to consider very valid qualms, which you can catch on our Matrix commentary.
Kid's story.
This is my personal favorite.
Really?
Yes.
This is my brother's least favorite. I'm not quite sure where I stand on this.
But this is my personal favorite because it really, first of all, it presents something new to the Matrix, to the idea of the Matrix, which I think a lot of these, to a certain degree, do.
One of the
or
most
at least explores them the most. And this was actually originally going to be one of the online ones, but they've decide that the scene that happens at the end of this would probably be a bit too disturbing for to be put online.
One of the most closely connected to the new movies.
Yeah.
As well.
Because this character does show up in Zion in Reload and Revolutions. But, no, I like this because of the fact that it deals with a very personal, in a rather original way, deals with a very personal and emotional idea, which is the idea of depression. And basically, the rationale that they give at the end of the movie, of the short, sort of solidifies that. And, you know, sort of an unrest about things, not sure you know, what are we doing here? You know, what's, why am I going through this all the time? And all of that. And
is this saying that, you know, people who are, you know, who do have, you know, their fair share of emotional problems, are they more closely connected to the concept that, you know, this isn't right, this isn't...
I don't know if they're more connected to it. I think they're probably more attuned... Well,
attuned may be a good word, though.
I mean, there's a sense of unrest about your life, and, you know, emotionally you feel unrest about, you know, your life. And then you think, well, is this really my life? I mean, you know, so I think you do, it's that questioning nature starts to open up. I mean, you know, basically freeing your mind on your own as opposed to having to take a pill like they do in the movie.
Very similar animation to the anime sequence in Kill Bill.
Well, that plus it... It, this is more...
Was it done by the same animation house? Or?
No, I don't... I don't know who did the animation in Kill Bill. Studio 4 Degree C did the animation for it.
Mm-hmm.
This was written by the Wachowskis and directed by Shinichiro Watanabe, who is best known for creating and directing Cowboy Bebop. And he actually has two segments on here. Second one's later on.
Not surprised there.
Nope. But don't. No, this is sort of a rotoscoping type of animation, which is very reminiscent, actually, of the Richard Linklater film Waking Life.
Right.
As far as Kill Bill, I can see the similarities with the
animation.
Kill Bill animation sequence, but Waking Life is the one that I most identify with.
This is kind of irreverent because I think we were just getting out of high school when I think this was coming up, when like kids were having cell phones.
Yeah, I did have one college teacher who would take cell phones away.
Yeah.
If I
but I think we were just finishing up with high school when cell phones were becoming... coming into their own as far as, like, youth was concerned. Students.
Yeah.
Do what you gotta do, baby. Do what you gotta do.
More great Juno Reactor music here. Track called Masters of the Universe.
That was good stuff.
You know what? This is kind of similar. I hate referencing back to the movies, but it's very similar to the sequence in the first movie where Neo's given the choice of, you know, leaving his office, you know. And,
yeah.
Or, you know, or staying, you know, and kind of like, you know, sticking with what feels right and what, you know.
Yeah. Well, apparently, originally it was supposed to, kid was supposed to get away just by running, but apparently Watanabe decided, you know, it'd be much more fun, much cooler if he got away on a skateboard.
Right. Mm-hmm. This works extremely well, especially with the animation stuff.
Because, I mean, it just keeps it moving, like, Gangbusters.
That's pretty sweet, though.
Yeah. I think there was a slight degree of motion capture in here, which really? I think is partly something you do see in rotoscoping, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow.
But...
going back again.
Yeah, and the piece that opened this one was Peace Orchestra, Who Am I? It's a song I enjoy, too.
Oh, that's right. The the special whatever came with the actual soundtrack too.
Yeah, there were. Yeah, I mean, you could just buy the DVD, or you could buy the DVD with soundtrack, which that's the one I obviously
might have to pick that up.
You know, Neil was given the choice of either going out into the ledge or staying in his office building, and you know, he obviously, as he does in the movie, he stays inside. I mean, but do you think this would have been similar to what would have happened with him if he had actually gone out into the ledge? Or
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where obviously we really won't know because
you
of...
You know, would Morpheus would have told him over the phone to, you know, to jump, or you know, just to trust him?
I don't know.
To, you know, that's one of the questions that I...
But yeah, this is the sequence that really took this out the running as a segment to put online because of the fact
that... You're jumping off a building?
Yeah.
that might be a problem. But no, I mean, this one is pretty good. I can see why this one would be your favorite one.
Yeah. It's the one I find myself watching the most now, if I do put this in. I mean, it's not the cheeriest of them, by far. It's not entertaining in the sense of, oh, that was a fun one to watch, but it's probably one of the most artistic, I think. I want to say, I really hate using that because, I mean, all of these are just prime examples of animation, but I think there's a quality to this that is just missing in the other ones. I think there's more of an emotional connection, and I'll talk about that in one of the other segments coming up.
Carrie Ann Moss.
Yes.
Carrie Ann Moss and Reeves.
Keanu Reeves. Five voices for this one. And Carrie Ann Moss is in one later, too.
The only one that Keanu Reeves provides his voice for. The only short.
Yeah.
Stuff right there.
Woo!
I like the way all these open, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very much in the spirit of the films.
Of course.
This is one of my personal favorites.
It's never been one of mine, but I've started to warm to it.
I mean, I think the action sequences are well thought out, just as well as the fight scene is thought out, choreographed in the Flight of the Osiris, and I don't know, it plays so much like a video game to me.
Yeah,
just with the action sequences.
It's written and directed by, I'm not even gonna try to pronounce his name, but he's the same guy who was responsible for the classic anime Ninja Scroll.
Ninja Scroll, sweet.
And if you've ever seen that movie, you can actually see the similarities between the two.
Oh yeah, most definitely. and probably the fact that his roots are so, you know, obviously anime. That's probably something that has to, I mean, that
this is one of the ones that's probably the purest form of anime. Mm-hmm. I mean
that sequence right there with just the slashes and not actually seeing and, you know,
yeah.
I mean, that's just anime right there. This sequence right here. Great idea. I don't think I'd be able to do that with it, though.
Yeah.
You gotta be pretty strong to be able to do that. That's pretty hardcore. How about doing that? Especially on horseback.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my most favorite sequences right here.
Yeah, this is a really good sequence.
This acknowledges. This is another acknowledgement. Another acknowledgement to the first movie. You know, the idea of being able to go back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that
bullet time?
You can see a little bit of bullet time even in cartoons. That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
His voice sounds familiar. I mean, he almost sounds like what's his name?
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's not.
Well, yeah.
I'm positive it's not.
He on the side for I thought it was him to begin with.
I did too. Of course, I wasn't going to say anything because I didn't look stupid or anything.
Well, I mean, not now, but yeah, of course it's all.
Also, sort of a throwback to Cypher's decision, the Joe Pantoliano's character's decision in the original.
Well, that's what I meant when I made that reference.
Yeah.
This is great right there.
Yeah, there's some great animation in this one.
This always reminds me of the first person shooters that you see in video games, with the wall and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, this sequence for some unknown reason continuously reminds me of the video game. Yep, you're ready. I mean, you can kind of see the computer animation versus the
animation.
Well, how much of an influence has computer animation had on recent anime?
A ton.
Yeah, I think Ghost in the Shell was one of the first ones that really utilized it.
Mm-hmm.
The two have married together beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and a lot of them do different versions. Some of it's total computer generation in some sequences, and then, you know, total cell animation somewhere else.
Yeah.
And some of them blend using computers to do cell animation, and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's definitely had a big influence, and it's only going to get more.
Oh yeah,
influential. Which is good. You know, I do not mind that.
Yeah.
Well, the two animation styles seem to be pretty much meant to be together.
Mm-hmm.
Meant to.
I think just regular animation in general, not necessarily just anime.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
it can be overdone, and
of course,
you can see anime. It has been overdone.
You can see examples of that in some Hollywood animated projects, but.
This is a great sequence right here.
Yeah.
You kind of have a. Some of the sound effects when he's in the first one, you know, with the mirror and everything. You know, you'll cover the sound effects from that.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty rough right there. Where exactly did she stab him? It looks to be in the throat, but he's actually talking right now. So I think that's happening. Messed up. I should do that to somebody and then be asleep in that.
Well, what she does to him is pretty called for.
Yeah. It's a pretty nice payoff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a good little tag at the end. Yeah, there you go.
Fuck, too.
You go, girl. Yeah.
Good to go.
So what's next?
love to see a full
anime. World records next.
Oh, that, jeez.
I'd love to see 26 episodes of that right there. That'd be sweet.